The following programming is sponsored by Don Beischel. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Peasley Media Group. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down on you.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Conservative Voice here on WWDB AM 860. I'm Gary Heasley. I'm the host of The Conservative Voice, and with me is Ada Nestor, who's joined me in the studio again to co-host. Thanks, Ada, for being back.
Very excited to be here. It's a big week.
It's a big, big week. I mean, this is going to be a fascinating discussion. Now, if you would like to join this discussion, we'd love to have you. You know, we really do this so that we can have that kind of conversation that we have at our Keystone Town Halls, that we have here on this show. If you want to dial in, 888-329-3306, we'd love to hear your thoughts. This first hour, we're going to spend some time talking about the fascinating debate that occurred last night. We're going to go through some of that, some of the reactions, and maybe some of what may be coming down the road now. And then in the second hour, we're going to have a great guest. Heather Honey is going to join us. We're going to talk about election integrity issues. And then we're going to be joined by Beth Ann Rossica, a writer who puts a lot of material on Broad and Liberty, a news platform here in Philadelphia. And we're going to talk about some of the really important stuff that Beth Ann has been writing about. She's been doing some great work around things like the books in the libraries and what are those books and are they real? And some other critical issues. So I think you'll find that fascinating. So thank you for joining the Conservative Voice. So the question I think we've got to figure out here is, why did the Democrats set up last night? You know, were they completely shocked? Were they stunned and surprised? Have they been completely ignorant of what's been going on with Joe Biden for the last 5-6 years? Remember that in the 2020 race, they kept him in a basement. They restricted him from being accessed by the media. He didn't get a lot of access to the public. It's not a surprise, I don't think, to the Democrat Party that their candidate is incapable of running the country. Am I missing something here?
Well, I think they've known all along the situation that they have with Biden. And in my opinion, they've all been complicit in hiding it from the American public. June is the earliest we've ever held a debate. The conventions have not even happened yet. So it seems to me, based on the performance last night and the media coverage of the debate, they got their talking points and it's time to cut Biden loose.
So they scheduled this debate very, very early in the season. They scheduled their convention late in the season. And then the second debate that is scheduled is supposed to occur well after, a month after their convention.
September, I believe.
Yeah, I don't know if it's 3 or 4 weeks, but it's weeks. So there's a lot of time to prepare. Now, this discussion about a switch out has been going on for a long time. But there are some elements, and we'll get to that in a moment. But some of the things that were covered last night, I think, were really, really important. There's been a lot of discussion for now, you know, many years, that the one issue that is constantly used to convince otherwise thinking people to vote for radicals is abortion. It is an issue that I don't think the conservatives, the Republicans, the pro-life folks, I don't think they really argue effectively on abortion. I think that's evident by the fact that so many people, and specifically suburban females, it seems, from what we hear in polling and whatnot, but they're so dedicated to that issue that they will set aside their family's prosperity. They will set aside the loss of the Constitution. They will set aside every other issue and vote solely on that. And as a result of that, of course, we've got this incapacitated person sitting in the White House, because that couldn't have happened without the abortion enthusiast vote. Let's not, you know, miss the point that the abortion enthusiast community is huge.
Very big.
And they've been propagandized for so many years. They literally connect abortion to healthcare. They think it represents freedom and rights and all of this. So you know, it is something that's really important to that entire abortion enthusiast community. And they vote on that alone. Hence, World War III started in this first Democrat term. Hence, this crazy inflation, the evisceration of the 10th Amendment, the loss of our Fourth Amendment rights. And they don't care because nothing in their world comes nearly as close to the importance of abortion. So last night, Trump hit on abortion. And if we could play this first clip.
And they are raping and killing women. And it's a terrible thing. As far as the abortion is concerned, it is now back with the states. The states are voting. In many cases, it's frankly a very liberal decision. In many cases, it's the opposite. But they're voting, and it's bringing it back to the vote of the people, which is what
everyone wanted. So, you know, the point that he was making, and I think it's great that people start, let's talk about this. What happened when Roe v. Wade, which was a terrible decision, was overturned, is that the states then decide. Now, a lot of the folks that I talk to and spend time with know that, but the American people don't. So when they hear that if they vote for a governor or some state legislator, it's important. Yeah, that's one of the issues that might certainly be taken up by a state legislature. But when they're voting for the U.S. Senate and abortion is the issue, that means that they think that there should be a national law, again, setting aside this sort of federalist structure we have where the federal government decides everything. And, you know, I don't think there would be any resistance for these people to having a national dictate that says abortion at any time for any reason without limitation. That is now, by the way, in the Ohio Constitution.
They absolutely would prefer to have one single law that determines how each state operates, regardless of the population of those states. I think returning it back to the states and allowing those people who live in those states to decide what their law is going to be is the absolute most appropriate decision, especially with something so viscerally reactive for people. I think they made the absolute right decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. There was also a video just this week that made the rounds of the original filer admitting that she was misled, that she lied in the original filings and in the original hearing. So I think that people are being very misled as to the real effects of Roe v. Wade being overturned. And that is so they can capitalize on their votes and their support in each election cycle.
That's right. And now they went on and continued talking about seven states.
This is the same topic. Seven states have no legal restrictions on how far into a pregnancy a woman can obtain an abortion. Do you support any legal limits on how late a woman should be able to terminate a pregnancy?
I supported Roe v. Wade, which had three trimesters. The first time is between the woman and the doctor. Second time is between the doctor and an extreme situation. The third time is between the doctor, between the woman and the state. The idea that the politicians, that the founders wanted the politicians to be the ones making decisions about women's health is ridiculous. That's the last. No politician should be making that decision. A doctor should be making those decisions. That's how it should be run. That's what you're going to do. And if I'm elected, I'm going to restore Roe v. Wade.
Now, that discussion, I can't really follow his three trimesters thing and the states in there and their doctors in there and things. I mean, obviously, this is just another example of his seriously diminished state and sort of fugue state or confusion that he's living in. But the end conclusion was a doctor should make that decision, as Biden put it forward. We know that's not what he meant because, you know, we have a president incapable of really addressing issues. But at the end, this idea of restoring Roe v. Wade, what does that mean? Remember, when this happened, the panic through the enthusiast community, the abortion enthusiast community, was, I'm not going to be able to have an abortion anywhere. Since that time, Ohio, a Republican governor, a Republican Senate, and a Republican House in their state legislature, total Republican control, has now put in place an amendment to the Ohio Constitution that guarantees the right to have an abortion up to the very minute of birth. If that child hasn't just wriggled out the birth canal, they could be killed. And it's a constitutional amendment. How did that happen? An incredibly effective media campaign with money pouring into Ohio from all over the United States on the abortion enthusiast side and very, very little pushback on the anti-abortion side. Now, they put forward a yeoman's effort, but they just don't have the resources and the scale. And frankly, they're a little shy about battling. I mean, we don't talk about what abortion really means.
They should be. Look at what's happening to multiple people in the last 3 years for simply praying outside abortion clinics. They have been prosecuted. They have been attacked by our Department of Justice. So there's a reason for their hesitancy, I think, at this point. I understand the reluctance to get involved. I obviously live a different way personally, but I do understand others' reluctance.
Yeah, that does make sense. And but then there is that other issue as well, which is resources. When you look at the amount of money that the abortion enthusiast community can rally into a cause like that, it's unlimited. It is as much as it takes. They had pledged, I think, $50 million for that campaign. I think they got it done for 36 or 7, something in that range. So they, you know, in their minds, pull it off with efficiency because they didn't expend as much money as they were prepared to spend. But let's be clear, if it was taking 50 and they hadn't felt like they got it done, they'd have spent 100.
Absolutely.
There's no limit to the resources the abortion enthusiast and the abortion industry could put together to try to make that happen. Now they have the chance to go do this in all the states. Are they, in fact, worse off without Roe v. Wade? Well, you know, it's not clear to me that they are. Now, we've got one more clip on this issue, and it talks about what it really means in Ohio and what Biden and the Democrats want. And to be clear, I don't think Biden's relevant in any way about any issue.
Right. He's not.
He's not relevant.
The country.
So this is not about Biden. What he's putting forward are the positions that any Democrat nominee is going to advance. It's what the party is dedicated to. But let's play the last clip on abortion.
So that means he can take the life of the baby in the ninth month and even after birth, because some states, Democrat run, take it after birth. Again, the governor, former governor of Virginia, put the baby down, then we decide what to do with it. So he's willing to, as we say, rip the baby out of the womb in the ninth month and kill the baby. Nobody wants that to happen, Democrat or Republican. Nobody wants it to happen.
Now, see, I think that what Donald Trump did right there was incredibly important because he actually put it into words. He said the words that no one ever says. If that message had been pushed harder in Ohio, then that ballot initiative would not have passed, and they would not have a constitutional amendment that guarantees the right to do exactly what he just said.
Well, you see what happened in the fallout from that Northam interview during the campaign, I believe in 2022. When was the
21 or 2? Yeah,
21 or 2 with Glenn Youngkin. They absolutely 22. Pushed that message out and made it an effective one. This is what they're really talking about. We're not talking about women's health care. We're talking about female babies. What about their health care at full term? You are able to survive.
Yeah,
they brag about going too far. They only want it to be the max. There is no compromise. There used to be compromise in this conversation 20 years ago. There used to be people who wanted reasonable laws in place that protected the life of the children as well as protected a woman's right to choose, but within limits.
You can't compromise with radicals and Marxists.
We're learning that now, I think.
So, I remember distinctly watching the video several times of the Virginia governor on that show saying, we're going to take the child after it's born and we're going to set it aside and stabilize it. I'm paraphrasing and not quoting. And then the doctor, you know, we're going to have a conversation with the doctor, decide what we want to do with it. Now, he's talking about a living child in a hospital that has
baby.
Survived.
Yep.
Whatever the challenges were, the birth process has survived. We're going to decide what we want to do with it. That's post-birth abortion that he's talking about. And they, of course, later tried to say it wasn't what it was. But I saw the clip again yesterday. So I really commend Donald Trump for being one of the few that will stand up and actually say the words, explain what it means. Wherever you stand on abortion, outside of a small, radical group of the abortion enthusiast community, nobody really thinks they should be able to take a fully formed child out of a womb and kill it at 9 months. It's only the industry that thrives on it and the sort of demonic folks and what, again, I call this the abortion enthusiast community. They will support that. You know, and it's for convenience, by the way. There are polls showing that a lot of the latest term abortions happen because maybe a relationship ended or some other thing has happened. So it's not truly about mother's health in many, many, many cases. And of course, there's the other motive, which is
financial.
That's right. So
selling
the tissues and fluids is most valuable in the most formed children.
Yeah.
So, So I thought it was great that Trump hit that. Now, another issue that's, of course, important to everybody is border security and immigration. So let's just listen to the way the question was asked of Joe Biden and think about why a Democrat like Jake Tapper would ask the question this way.
Thank you.
Let's turn now to the issue of immigration and border security. President Biden, a record number of migrants have illegally crossed the southern border on your watch. Overwhelming border states and overburdening cities such as New York and Chicago, and in some cases causing real safety and security concerns. Given that, why should voters trust you to solve this crisis?
Now, you know, when you think about all the debates we've all seen over the many years that they've been doing these things, they're typically ridiculous TV shows. They're not even worth watching because the questions that are asked are so incredibly biased that it's designed to promote the Democrat and destroy anyone who's a conservative or a pro-American or, you know, anybody on that side. He asked that question clearly and factually. And by the way, CNN's getting huge credit for asking questions like that.
I thought they were extremely fair last night.
I did too. Now, I didn't expect that.
I was very surprised as
yeah.
well.
So why? Why, after all the debates we've watched where both the Republicans and the Democrat people, you know, like a Megyn Kelly, they're all asking setup questions to destroy the pro-American candidate. Why did he ask that question that way to the Democrat?
They can't have him be their candidate.
That's why.
And he's never going to step out of the race himself. Jill is not going to step out of the race herself or, you know, support him or encourage him to do so. And I think what we're going to see is the 25th Amendment.
Well, I'm hoping that doesn't happen. I don't think they should take him out between now and January. Whoever's running the country gets to keep running it. It may get worse with a Harris.
Sure.
I think that's a threat.
I think it absolutely would get worse.
Yeah.
I just don't see how they convince him to step aside at this point.
Now, you know, it was interesting in this next clip where he talks about being endorsed by the Border Patrol. Fascinating. Oh, hold on. There we go.
Because we worked very hard to get a bipartisan agreement that not only changed all of that, it made sure that we were in a situation where you had no circumstance where they could come across the border with the number of border police there are now. We significantly increased the number of asylum officers. By the way, the Border Patrol endorsed my position. In addition to that, we found ourselves in a situation where when he was president, he was separating babies from their mothers, putting them in cages, making sure the families were separated. That's not the right way to go. What I've done since I've changed the law, what's happened? I've changed it in a way that now you're in a situation where there are 40% fewer people coming across the border illegally. That's better than when he left office. And I'm going to continue to move until we get the total ban on the total initiative relative to what we're going to do with more Border Patrol and more asylum officers.
So there's a critical element there that he keeps talking about more asylum officers. And he talks about how illegal migration is down. It's not, every statistic shows it's not down. If he closed the border today, he still let in 15 million people. And we have no idea who they are. And while he says it's safer than it was, better than it was when he left office and then mumbles and stumbles, of course, it was yesterday that a note went out that the ICE has admitted that they're doing a manhunt for 50 ISIS people who were brought across the border that they know are here, they don't know where, and they're hunting them. So it's safer than when Donald Trump closed the border or very nearly closed the border and took the flow to a trickle. It's safer than that. And no one's come in except the 50 ISIS people that ICE has admitted to and the tens of thousands of Chinese military age men who came here single up that Darien Gap, you know, except them and except all of the Hezbollah 910 unit people and all the others that have come in who we have no idea what their interest or intent is.
And at 9:33, the Border Patrol Union sent out a tweet that said, to be clear, we have never and never will endorse Biden. So they made sure everyone knew their stance on what was going on.
So they were paying attention.
Absolutely.
Now, we've got a caller. Mike, welcome to the Conservative Voice.
Well, good morning. Well, actually, good afternoon, Gary.
Good afternoon.
How are you guys?
Well, we're fascinated because this was such a great example. There's a lot to cover in this debate analysis.
Yeah, I thought... for CNN, it was mission accomplished. They, I think they portrayed President Biden in the light that they wanted to, which was, you know, weak and kind of a buffoon, and let him stumble along. They carried him a little bit, and they did. But I think really what they want to do is, as this administration circles the drain here, they'd like to catch Trump in it as well.
Yeah, they'd like to.
That would be a bonus.
Now, you know, to your point, we've got one more, the next clip to play where Trump responds.
Yeah.
President Trump?
I really don't know what he said at the end of that sentence. I don't think he knows what he said either. Look, we have the safest border in the history of our country. The border, all he had to do was leave it. All he had to do was leave it. He decided.
Yeah, keep going.
To open up our border, open up our country to people that are from prisons, people that are from mental institutions, insane asylum. Terrorists. We have the largest number of terrorists coming into our country right now. All terrorists, all over the world, not just in South America, all over the world. They come from the Middle East, everywhere. All over the world, they're pouring in. And this guy just left it open. And he didn't need legislation because I didn't have legislation. I said, close the border. We had the safest border in history. In that final couple of months of my presidency, we had, according to Border Patrol, who is great. And by the way, who endorsed me for president, but I won't say that, but they endorsed me for president. Brandon, just speak to him. But look, we had the safest border in history. Now we have the worst border in history. There's never been anything like it. And people are dying all over the place, including the people that are coming up in caravans.
Thank you, President Trump. President Biden?
And you know, Donald Trump mentioned last night the 12-year-old who was buried yesterday. Who had been raped and murdered by illegal aliens. And, you know, these tragedies are so hard to accept that this is happening, not in a one-off in our country. It's happening in a matter of due course. It's happening on a regular basis. Children are being abused by these criminals that have been allowed to come in. And statistically, if you look at Venezuela, their murder rate has gone down because they specifically said, we've sent all of our criminals to the United States.
And they're just building a bridge now through the Darien Gap to make it much, much easier for them to push these people north.
So that's a really important point. So there's a river in southern Panama where there's no bridge. There's no way across. There's nothing on either side but jungle. There's no road to or from that bridge.
Right.
And the Chinese are building a bridge there because they want to make the delivery of Chinese into the United States more efficient, because they can get into Ecuador without a visa, and then they just put them on the road north, and there's a series of way stations along the way to keep them supplied and help them make the journey. So there's going to be a Chinese path that the Chinese Communist Party will authorize people to use, and there'll be another path. So what Trump is saying is right, and again, he was crystal clear, and he said what Americans know is happening, because now we're starting to see cities transform. Now they're showing up in places like Chicago and New York, and people in New York have had people knocking at their doors, and they open the door and say, you know, who is this? Well, it's somebody from a foreign country that's here demanding food and money.
Well, Trump said it last night. Every state is a border state now. They have effectively bused, flown by train, trafficked all of these people into our communities.
And what's interesting about Biden on this one, because he stayed on point on this, I actually think Biden outperformed. I wasn't sure he'd make it all the way through. I think he did a really great job.
He looked terrible, but...
He looked terrible, but...
I track.
Yeah, you know, he didn't fall over. You got to get that.
I mean, he didn't fall down, yes.
Yeah, he didn't, you know, stand in that half squat position for 20 seconds.
Did
I mean,
you see how he was escorted off the stage?
Yeah, it was pretty sad. But the thing about him
he
is...
He didn't have that squatted over position because... they made sure he had all his bowel movements first.
I'm sure he was properly medicated. But, you know, the reality is he was able, as he's always done throughout his entire career, to say things that are just absolutely not true and say them without hesitation, without flinching. And, of course, we know what the narrative is for the DNC because everybody on their side, all these Democrat operatives, CNN, ABC, all of them, came out and immediately said, Trump's a liar. Biden came afterwards and said, it's hard to debate somebody who lies.
Right.
So here he is, absolutely misrepresenting, lying about, faking a huge number of things, turns around and accuses Trump of lying. And Trump stayed on point last night. He was as good last night as he was in Philadelphia at the rally a week ago.
Sure. Yeah, no, I think he did a very good job. I think he allowed himself to be a little bit more aggressive towards the end of it. But I'm not sure what I would do in that situation when you're debating someone that, frankly, in some situations, you don't even understand what they're saying and no one around you is saying anything or reacting to it at all. I think he did the best he could with the situation he was in.
I do, too. And you know, we've got a few things. I want to get through one more substantive thing, and then we'll get to some of the reactions from the left. So in this thing about tax increases, you know, if you listen to how he says he's going to fix the debt, there's a thing that he was talking about doing to fix the debt, and it's about the tax code.
What I'm going to do is fix the tax system. For example, we have 1,000 trillionaires in America, billionaires in America. And what's happening? They're in a situation where they, in fact, pay 8.2% in taxes. If they just paid 24% or 25%, either one of those numbers, they'd raise $500 million, billion dollars, I should say, in a 10-year period. We'd be able to wipe out his debt. We'd be able to help make sure that all those things we need to do, child care, elder care, making sure that we continue to strengthen our health care system, making sure that we're able to make every single solitary person eligible for what I've been able to do with the dealing with everything we have to do with. Look, if we finally beat Medicare.
Thank you, President Biden. President Trump?
Well, he's right.
So that's where Trump came in and said, yeah, he's right. He beat Medicare to death.
He did beat Medicare. He beat it to death, and he's destroying Medicare.
And you know, what's interesting about this, first of all, you just heard a guy say, a guy who's, you know, been installed in the White House, that if he raises taxes to 24% on billionaires, something we know is not going to happen, that he can raise $500 billion over 10 years. We're generating $2 trillion deficits each year. We're adding $1 trillion of debt to the debt load of this country every 100 days. You could raise taxes as far as you want. There is no tax fix. And these increases in deficit, this incredibly irresponsible, corrupt deficit spending is driving inflation. So you got this clown saying he's going to raise taxes to fix somehow this debt problem, which is completely preposterous. And you've got people saying, well, the Fed's raised rates. That's going to stop inflation. No, inflation isn't being driven by low interest rates. Inflation's being driven by $2 trillion deficits and $1 trillion added to the debt every 100 days. So, you know, when I look at this, I think this is absolutely, it's just ridiculous. Now, we've talked on this show a lot, especially with Joel Griffith from the Heritage Foundation, about the debt and the deficits. And we're going to come back to that in later episodes because this is so important. It is undoubtedly going to change the trajectory of our country. It just is. You know, you can't have a nation take on this kind of debt and not be affected. Right. So the World Bank did a study and says countries with a debt to GDP ratio above 77% for a prolonged period experience significant slowdowns in economic growth. So, OK, it's not just me making this up. You know, there's real data and analysis behind it. It should be obvious, but some people don't understand. If you look at when we actually crossed 100% debt to GDP ratio, that was in around, let's say that was around 2007. I think this is when we did that, 2009.
Right in that sweet spot, yeah. Between Bush and Obama.
Yeah, so it was a result of the 2007 crisis. They started pumping money to fix that and save the banks. We crossed the 100% debt to GDP ratio in 2009. We've been carrying this burden for 15 years, and we don't think it's going to have an impact. And now it's not just 100% of GDP. It's not the 77% the World Bank was talking about. We're talking about 120% to GDP, debt to GDP ratio, and we don't think it's going to have an impact. You know, and on Medicare, let's be clear. When you look back in time, Medicare payroll taxes, let's talk about 1972. Medicare and payroll taxes covered 64% of our Medicare burden. The general fund, just federal dollars, covered 20%, and 15% were covered by premiums. In 2022, premia were still 15% or 16% had gone up. The general fund had climbed to 43%, so general funds out of government tills. And then Medicare payroll taxes had fallen from 64 to 36%. Look forward to 20 years, right? 30 years. It's going to be down ever lower until finally the taxes being paid can't possibly support Medicare. The taxes being paid aren't going to support Social Security. And we're doing nothing to address that. This nation will not survive this level of fiscal responsibility. So I'm glad that Trump brought it up. I'm glad he talked about it. I'm glad that Biden revealed that they have no plan and have no interest in dealing with it. It's unfortunate that some people will hear what he said about raising rates on billionaires and actually think that's a serious proposal that would have an effect.
It was a missed opportunity for the hosts of last night's debate to not remind him that he promised in 2020 to not raise taxes on anyone making less than $400,000 a year. That is not what happened, admittedly, by the administration. So I think that we have a lot of information that we can look at back at from 2020 to compare to 2024 and look at the state that we're in between the two points to see that things are not going well. Things right. are bad.
Well, now, okay, so things are bad. Who knows? Well, we know that there's about 35% of the population that has no idea what's going on. They're completely duped by corporate media. They believe whatever they're told. They won't challenge anything. But there was a CNN voter panel that happened last night, and they just came on and asked people what they thought. And so we've got a little clip on that, the CNN
voter
panel.
I want to get a sense from all of you. We were all watching the appearance of the two candidates. What did you make of how they both performed and the way that they were appearing in the camera and beyond? Who had a strong reaction, especially to the age component?
I would have to say, after watching the debate and watching how Biden handled himself and answering the questions, it reassured me of his unassurance be able to lead our country. I'm concerned he was hesitant, very not cognitive. Seemed like his data, he was missing his numbers. So very concerning. That's somebody I don't think that needs to lead our country.
If people first.
Now, that's not a political pundit. You know, that's Jane Mainstreet right there. And she's listening to this and going, wait a minute. This guy's not capable. He's not capable of even being in the chair. So I always think about the people who are just awakening now, yeah. who have had this hidden from them for 4 years.
And have just believed what they've been given because they've been trained to trust the media.
And now they wake up this morning and they go, wait a minute. This thing I was told is a caricature of Biden that was created by Republican media, whatever that is, right? There isn't any Republican media, right? Corporate media is completely controlled. And Fox News, we could talk about in more detail, but it's not exactly our friend. Paul Ryan is not a friend. And the sons who've inherited Fox News are globalists
Absolutely.
Who love Davos.
Yep.
So you know, when you think about what that woman said, it's clear to everybody that there is a problem. Well, not everybody.
Forget when we are typically speaking in day-to-day life, we tend to stutter as well. So sometimes it will take time to be able to think about what you're going to say. But regardless, when it comes to a strong leader and what we're looking for in a leader, I'm looking for somebody that I trust to be able to uphold policies that will protect me and are more concerned for the general well-being of everybody in the United States, which I got more from Biden, considering he did a lot more talking about policies, what he's done and what he plans to do. Whereas on the other side from Trump, all I really heard was, I've done this and it was the best ever, but I never heard what it was. Or I heard that Biden was the worst ever, but I never heard why. So there was a lot that was left unclear for me. So while he may have appeared like a stronger candidate, on paper, there was a lot missing in terms of actual debate.
Now, listen to that. It appeared that Trump was a stronger candidate on paper, but it was missing and policy, something or other. So this is a classic example of what I call the 35s. That 35% of the country that is consistently polled throughout this entire Democrat administration saying Kamala Harris is doing a great job. You have to be so deep in either brand loyalty to the Democrats or the propaganda coming off of NPR to believe that Kamala Harris is even capable of understanding what she's doing. She at times sounds worse than Biden.
It's cognitive dissonance on full display. They can't allow themselves to believe that they've been duped. They have to go along with it.
They have to.
To the end, wherever the end may be.
So this young woman, this poor child, sounds like a victim of what Yuri Bezmenov was talking about in 1984 when he did his famous speech about how the Soviet Union will use propaganda to get people to such a point that they will deny the evidence in front of them that they see with their own eyes that says what they believe is untrue, they will deny it. It doesn't matter how compelling the evidence is. They will be so convinced. And if you look at Matthias Desmet and this idea of mass formation psychosis, you boil it down, you look at the polling, you kind of come to this 35%. So I call them the 35ers.
Sure.
Right? And these folks, there is nothing that Biden could do, anyone else could do, the Democrat Party can do, that will ever dissuade them. And if you listen to how she speaks, she looks to government as a parent, as the protector, as the grantor and beneficiary, the beneficent dictator, the beneficent dictator. They're looking at government as the source of all things good, sustenance.
So she's clearly never heard the quote of the scariest words in the English language of, "I'm from the government and I'm here to help." So we're not teaching our children this, or at least the public school is not teaching our children this information.
Well, there's the schools and the propaganda. You've
sure.
got so many influences, pop culture, media. It's fascinating. This woman is a victim who is unable to think clearly, and you could just hear it. She even contradicts herself as she speaks.
Because now, it was far more than a stutter that happened last night.
Yeah. Look, and she's right. Everybody stutters.
Sure, I stutter.
You do.
Yeah.
You know, we reach for things we can't recall. It happens all the time if you are really engaged.
Yeah.
That's not what happened last night.
No.
It was clear to everybody. Now, Van Jones is a guy that's on CNN all the time.
Sycophant, I would say.
He's one of the most privileged people in America.
Absolutely.
He went to Ivy League schools. He's had this incredible career. This guy's loaded. This is a person who's been cared for his whole life and is, again, privileged beyond imagination compared to Joe Mainstreet. Now, Van Jones doesn't say anything that isn't on the Democrat script. He doesn't say anything that the globalists haven't approved in advance. So let's hear what Van Jones had to say on CNN.
That was painful. I love Joe Biden. I work for Joe Biden. He didn't do well at all. He did not do well at all. And he looked, you know, I'll give you the analysis. You know, you kind of have the old man versus the con man. I can walk you through how I'm supposed to see it and say it, but I just want to speak from my heart. I love that guy. That's a good man. He loves his country. He's doing the best that he can. But he had a test to meet tonight to restore confidence of the country and of the base. And he failed to do that. And I think there's a lot of people who are going to want to see him consider taking a different course now. We're still far from our convention. And there is time for this party to figure out a different way forward if he will allow us to do that. But that was not what we needed from Joe Biden, and it's personally painful for a lot of people. It's not just panic, it's pain of what we saw tonight.
Now, do you think he just came up with that off the spur of the moment by watching what happened on that debate stage?
No. If he will allow us to do it, by the way, I mean, what a statement. Who's running our country? If he will allow us to move on from him?
Well, I think I thought that was incredibly preposterous. This man is pretending that somehow Joe Biden decides who gets to run.
Right.
Now, I understand that there's a lot of political gamesmanship and everybody on the DNC side has been trying to position for this role for a long time. Harris is going to want it. Her team's going to fight hard to get it. But let's be clear. I think everybody knows there is a group behind the group that makes these decisions. Nobody like Joe Biden gets nominated, you know, with that incredible move they made last time with Clyburn. You know, it just pops up out of nowhere.
Yeah.
A candidate nobody really respects, you know, who's got so much corruption that's obvious. He could have been exposed at any time. That doesn't happen naturally.
The Democrats have had their primaries interfered with by the DNC and the powers that be these last three presidential cycles, with Bernie Sanders, with Joe Biden in 2020, and now again with Joe Biden in 2024, blocking other candidates from potentially running. You have RFK Jr., who was forced to run as an independent because they blocked his participation in the Democrat primary. When will the Democrat voters get upset and angry about their trust and their commitment to the party being consistently abused?
And the 35s never will. But the regular Democrats, what I call the disillusioned Democrat, this large demographic that's saying, gee, I wish I could afford butter. you know, I wish I could put fuel in my car. I wish I could pay my rent.
Meat would really be cool this week, right?
Meat. Not printed meat.
Yeah.
I'd like real meat.
Just some meat.
That's a growing group. But he made a critical statement there, too. He said, it's far from our convention. So go back to the timing we talked about. They do an early first debate before the conventions, before anyone's officially nominated. They then have weeks to develop a new narrative between now and the convention. And the power of this incredible media machine is such that I think they can create a narrative out of anything.
Are we going to see an open convention on the Democrat side?
Well, I think what we're going to see, my guess is, and I'm just purely speculating, is that we're going to see a little bit more story about how he's declining, and then there's going to be a health issue announcement, and then they turn the corner, and they start talking about the hero, and this hero is going to emerge. Now, who the hero will be, we'll talk about in a second, but it's going to happen. Now, when they get to the convention, if you look at the Democrat makeup, right, it's about, say, 4,532 delegates that they have, and let's say 16% of those are what are called superdelegates. Now, superdelegates, that's 447 of them. They are members of the DNC. They are Democrat members of Congress. They're governors, distinguished party members is what they call them, right? These are the people that are picked by the insiders who decide as they're told, or at least they're the ones in the smoky room. 16%. So if there is a dispute, and if the selected candidate somehow isn't winning the nomination, in the second round of votes, the superdelegates come in, and now all of a sudden you've got 16% of the vote that's predetermined.
And I think there are a lot of people who feel apprehensive about the idea of Biden being pulled off of the ticket and them replacing him. But I think that the amount of effort, time, and money it takes to stand up a brand new campaign and to do it at a level of presidency in the last 2 or 3 months prior to Election Day would be a sight to behold. It'll certainly be unprecedented and a wild ride for the next few months.
Well, let's say that Biden stays in, or that there's more than one candidate appointed. In order to win in the first round, somebody has to get a majority, so it's 1,895 delegate votes. And if they don't, and it goes to a second vote, then again, the superdelegates come in. Nobody's going to overcome a 16% margin. It's almost impossible, right? So if they don't get it the first time around, then the establishment Democrats will decide who it is, and they'll appoint someone just the way Biden was appointed, just the way Bernie Sanders was taken out, just the way they manage everything. So it can happen. It is not easy. There can be controversy. Now, the question I think that comes up as well is, who will it be? And, you know, we've got what I put into two categories. One category is what I call the celebrity candidate. And the celebrity candidate are the ones that we all talk about. Big Mike, right? It's the Gavin Newsoms, right? The people who have been talked about for a really long time, who could be the candidate. You know, Hillary Clinton, again, coming back into the news this morning as a candidate. My view is, I don't think any of the celebrity candidates get it. I think they go to a Manchurian candidate, sort of an Obama, somebody that is established. People have kind of heard about them, but they don't know much about them. Now, I recognize this is not the popular view. This is just my view, and I could be terribly wrong. But if you start going through the list of Democrat governors, there are some people there that could be really quite effective. And there are also some that are very powerful.
I had been poo-pooing people's ideas and mention of Hillary Clinton because, you know, she was thoroughly defeated in 2016. We got 4 years of Trump, thank God. But with recent actions, with Julian Assange being freed, with the plea agreement including the destruction of all of the materials he still had in his possession, I actually don't think it's an impossibility that Hillary may be floated or they may be flirting with that idea, because taking Julian Assange off of the board has significant benefits. To who? Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think all of these things have been vetted. I'm sure that they're not scrambling. They keep saying on the news how they're scrambling. They're not scrambling.
They have
a plan. They're just executing the plan. The only people that don't know that are the ones that are sort of, you know, just listening and nodding along. So, all right, it could be one of the celebrity candidates, Newsom, Clinton, Big Mike. It could be, you know, some of those guys. It also could be some of these governors. So think about a Phil Murphy. Now, most of America has no idea who the governor of New Jersey is. None of these candidates would have any baggage because they'd be created out of whole cloth. Now, Kathy Hochul, maybe a little too messy. You know,
I don't think it could be any of the Democrat governors who ruled over their states horrifically in 2020 and 21.
So you're taking Gretchen Whitmer off the table, right? Baggage, right? She has baggage.
Baggage.
But you go to the there are a couple of different profiles. One profile, of course, is
Josh Shapiro.
Now, who is that? Well, that's a guy portrayed as moderate, obviously not moderate.
Not a moderate.
Had got elected with bipartisan support. A lot of Republican establishment helped him get elected.
What?
Yeah, it turns out. Yeah.
Turns
out, yeah, it turns out sitting county officials, city county leaders were helping. So it's somebody who would be portrayed as bipartisan and younger and moderate. And then you've got also, a candidate like, in Illinois, you've got J.B. Pritzker.
Bashir. Now,
you've got somebody who has a huge amount of money, politically experienced, deep in this weird religion these people have with, all the LGBTQ stuff being really elevated to religious status. You've got all of that. And then you've got, Bashir is one that I think is a real threat.
My consistent back and forth, though, is because the time is going to be so brief that they're going to need someone with better name recognition.
But they can create it. I understand.
Sure.
That's a very logical comment. I think you could be right.
Thank you.
And I got that from somebody I was talking to this morning. I think that could really be right. I get it. But on the other hand, creating somebody from nothing.
Well, sure. Obama.
Nobody's ever heard of Andy Bashir.
Right.
Nobody's ever heard even of J.B. Pritzker.
Right.
Nobody knows his sister's
those
doing.
Those of us in this world every single day have. But yeah, right. Most of the people.
Tim Walz let his city burn, lost a police precinct after saying clearly he wasn't going to do it. He's the governor of Minnesota.
Yeah.
Does anybody in America know who Tim Walz is? But he's been doing victory laps in Minnesota talking about all his policy wins. I think you could take one of these relatively unknown who could be described as next generation moderates with bipartisan support and elevate them. And in a matter of 4 weeks, they'll create a hero narrative like we've never seen. So is it a celebrity? Is it one of these other political operatives? Don't know. But 2 days ago, it was crazy to think there was going to be a switch.
To all of those not paying attention, yes.
That's right. Now, so there's a lot more to talk about around this thing. But, we're down to about 10 minutes of time in this first segment. And I want to cover something else, which I think is mightily important that you and I, Ada, have been talking about, which is the incredible rulings in the Supreme Court this week.
Very exciting stuff.
This is astonishing what's happened in the Supreme Court. One of them that I think is incredibly impactful is this idea that Chevron's been overturned. Now, if you think about Chevron, this is a sort of a crazy idea. I don't know how it ever became law, but the idea is that if the legislature, the Congress, has created a law that's not particularly clear, then the courts can just go to the executive branch and ask the bureaucrats that run these massive federal agencies what the law is. And the bureaucrats have final say. Now, that to me seems preposterous, and it's been abused to great extremes. It turns out the Supreme Court just ruled that can't be done any longer. That's not the right path.
Imagine that. So bureaucracies can't just control the people without any judicial input?
And without clarity from the legislature.
Imagine that.
That is really seriously a very significant change. Now, there's another one that's really important, which is this case called, this case from the Environmental Protection Agency.
Ohio versus EPA.
Yeah, that's a big one as well.
Yeah, so essentially the Supreme Court came out and indicated that the EPA cannot blanket put provisions on states, that states have individual power and that they can decide for themselves how they're going to manage their environmental protection measures. All different states are doing different things. You have multiple states right now who have banned weather modification techniques. I believe Tennessee is one of them and another state in the Northeast. So the EPA wanted to come in and put blanket restrictions on something like 20 states, and the Supreme Court said, no, you don't get to do that. States have rights, too.
I mean, that's amazing. That is a significant curtailment of this invasive 10th Amendment exploding government overreach that we've been suffering under as a nation for decades, many decades. There's another one that we got to hit that's very related, I think, which is this one related to the Securities and Exchange Commission. It was a 6-3 decision, so I think it was just the radicals that opposed it, you know, Sotomayor and this Ketanji Brown, who's a woman lady. You've got, in Securities and Exchange Commission versus Sarkeesian, you've got a ruling that says that the right to trial by jury that's in the Seventh Amendment to the Constitution actually is in force. Now, that amendment hasn't been enforced for decades.
Right.
And no one knows that. But the SEC has administrative courts. So they will come out and investigate you, cite you for a crime. They will indict you in their own private court. The judge is an employee of the SEC. The judge will then decide the case and issue a verdict and sentence you, typically to huge fines.
Yep, levy punishment.
Oh yeah, this is a major tool that the SEC uses all the time. They generate huge amounts of cash from this. This is a completely unconstitutional act. It's been that way for decades. And here we have, it's been overturned. That is, again, a major curtailment of the power of this fourth branch of government.
So anyone who cares about a limited government or a smaller operating government should be very supportive of all three of these decisions this week.
Oh, yeah, right. So you're saying basically the leftists that used to talk about freedom and stuff, I mean, they think that they're liberals and now they're just pawns. They ought to actually, if they were thinking, they would support that.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, and they would if the weapon of the government was being turned on them. But currently, that is not the people being targeted.
Yeah, that's right. You know, everybody always thinks they're on the safe club. They're all right. In the cool kids club. Let me tell you.
First they came for, that's and I right. wasn't.
Right. That's right. And when it comes for them, mm-hmm. they'll be shocked.
They'll be standing alone because they've taken all of us out first.
Now, there's another one. We're getting real close here. There's another one that I want to touch on that I think is really important and is infuriating. Not that the ruling was bad, because I think it was a good ruling, but the fact that so many have suffered under it. It's Fisher versus United States.
So with Fisher versus the United States, this was an argument that the obstruction charge that was added to a lot of the January 6th defendants was improperly added. And the Supreme Court essentially said it was. Their ruling today says that it must be proven with actual intent to delay the arrival of certificates used to count electoral votes and certify the results of the election. So if these people were just walking the halls like that little grandmother who was just waving, or the man walking around with the podium, although he shouldn't have touched the podium, I agree, he paid for it. But, you know, these people who were walking within the velvet ropes, just taking pictures of the room that they were in, probably shouldn't have had that obstruction of justice tack on.
Yeah, they probably hadn't. And of course, we had on this show, Jerry Perna, whose nephew, Matthew Perna, had been so persecuted by these people that this is a gentleman from Sharon, Sharpsville area up in northwest Pennsylvania. But his aunt is Jerry Perna, and she told his story. It's a tragic tale that ends with Matthew committing suicide. And so when I think about not just the people who have been rotting in jail for 3.5 years yeah. without a trial, or the people that have begun sentences that have no relationship to the actual crimes they were accused of,
right.
or the complete misrepresentation of all of this in the media, which of course is their standard practice. But now you're seeing that the Supreme Court has come down and said, hey, this doesn't work. You can't do this. The question I think we will want to have answered is, will this change anyone's sentence? Will this cause anything to change for the people who have been persecuted so far?
Well, and the other question is, will Jack Smith continue to use this charge against Donald Trump? And I think he will, actually. I think he will try to prove that Donald Trump himself tried to interfere with the delivery of these electoral votes and certify the election.
Oh, I think he will. I mean,
there's no turning back now.
No. And there's no connection between actual sort of, you know, legal theory that's valid and what Jack Smith's going to do. He's going to do whatever he has to do. He's a party operative. Just as if he was in the Soviet Union times and the Soviet Party, the Communist Party sent him in. He works for the party. He uses the government to affect the party's business. And that's his mission.
I think what we're waiting on now, I think there are a few more decisions yet to come out. But the one big one from this cycle, I believe, is presidential immunity. So we're going to, I think, find out either today or Monday. They've added another day to release decisions. So we're going to get that answer really soon, too.
Well, that's going to be fascinating. I mean, and I'll tell you, so you think about the last couple of days, We have had a debate that I was with a group of people last night who were cheering and clapping and just having a great time.
Yeah.
It was actually fun for a change because we're so used to being, you
know,
angry at debates because they so slanted. You know, we've had these incredible decisions come out of the Supreme Court that could have never happened without a Donald Trump presidency.
Absolutely.
Never would have happened. In fact, when you read these cases, it's hard to imagine any of the justices voting against them or even that they need to happen in the first place. The SEC ruling should never have been necessary because the SEC should never have established administrative courts. It's not their function. So, you know, we've had this great outcome in these last couple of days. Now, going forward, if the first part of our conversation about what comes next in the election is right, right, we're going to hear Donald Trump is a this and a that and a liar, rapist, you know, Russian agent may come back. Who knows? There's still people that think the Russia collusion hoax was real.
Yeah.
They say, I love this one. Where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah.
Well, what if the smoke is fake? All right. So when we get going, you know, and start moving forward, we've got a huge amount of energy right now. When they announce the Democrat nominee, this battle will turn. They are going to come at us hard. And by us, I mean the United States.
Right.
They are going to use every media outlet they can to create that hero narrative, whatever it is, dependent upon who the candidate actually becomes, who they select as a nominee. And of course, they're going to do that well after the primaries are done. Voters need not worry about being involved, right? Democrat voters completely out of the process now. This will be someone who's selected by the political operatives who are the deep and rooted establishment of the Democrat Party. When that comes, I think everyone who cares about the country and who understands what's going on has to be prepared to go out and speak to the people who are influenceable, not the radical 35s. I mean those disillusioned Democrats and the independents, the people that are really thinking. And they have to be prepared to talk about real issues and not pull the punches that has been done in the past, right? Where people kind of hide from the issues because they don't want to offend a leftist.
Yeah, the time has come to speak up. We can no longer sit quietly or idly by to watch these machinations take shape without our input, without our involvement, and without our engagement.
That's right. And we're lucky because we get to spend time with a lot of folks who put their shoulder to the wheel and have
Absolutely.
For years. And that's, you know, that sort of gives us encouragement. It's the folks that are not surrounded by patriotic Americans that I think are going to need a little support from us. And with that, we're going to close the first hour. Thank you for joining us for the Conservative Voice here on WWDB AM 860. We'll be back in about 4 minutes.